now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good afternoon, everyone, wherever you are in the world at this time. Hey, hey, what do you say? Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. How are you today? I am very excited to be with you here every Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. Each and every week, I put together these broadcasts and focus on the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And I place it all within the context of relationships with ourselves or others or God or the divine. And the reason why I place this integration in relationships is because whenever you think about it, we often go throughout life and we receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual wounds in relationships. And yet, that's not the end of the story, because we can also discover our greatest healing, strength, peace, forgiveness, and love through healthier relationships. You know, it's the relationships that's actually the common denominator. Because whenever we transform, we also transform others by our presence, our grace, and understanding. But first and foremost, the transformation must begin with us. Well, hello again. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I want you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And in case you cannot stay for the whole hour today and you would like to go back and listen to it on podcast, I'm happy to report that you can certainly do so. You can go back and listen again, or you can go back further into the archives and listen to previous shows. I invite you to do that. And also send me your comments, you know, what you think of them and so forth. And for those of you who are new to the program, again, welcome aboard. I'm always excited to have new listeners. And I would just like to say that as I begin every broadcast here, that I'm a firm believer that all of us, and it doesn't matter who, all of us around the world, those who have come before us, those who come after us, everyone comes into this world already equipped and graced with everything that we need for this life in terms of our skills, our talents, our strengths, our giftedness, our character traits, our personality, and so forth. But sometimes as we go along in this life, and perhaps due to some unpleasant experiences, you know, where we're just in the wrong place at the wrong time, we may be very tempted to hide our skills, our talents, and our strengths. We may want to hide our giftedness because perhaps they were exploited or perhaps they were disregarded. And to keep us from, you know, experiencing further wounding, we hide those things. You know, we push them way down so others cannot see it. And it doesn't do anybody, let alone ourselves, anybody, any good when we do that. Because not only are we pushing our giftedness way down so that others can see it, but we are also limiting ourselves by not allowing ourselves to bring out the very best of ourselves. And these are certainly given to us for the sake of others. Because, let's say, perhaps you were told that you would never amount to anything, or whatever other voice, you know, we heard telling us that there's nothing special to us, or that there's no way we could possibly live up to another person's standards. And, well, that's a true statement. There's no way we can live up to another person's standards because it keeps moving. the standard keeps moving. You know, if they raise the bar and say, well, if you want to be my friend, or if you want to love me, or if this, if that, and they keep moving the bar, as soon as we get close to like, okay, I'm almost there, and then it's moving all over the place, so that we can never attain another person's expectations. And it becomes often a vicious cycle, when perhaps even the person who's doing it may not realize what they are doing, because they have set perhaps a standard so high for themselves that it's impossible for them to reach it as well. But anyway, we do not realize our giftedness in this whenever we push that way down, and we often end up going through life maybe on autopilot and functioning from a place of woundedness or a place of victimhood, instead of a place of healing and wholeness and embracing our uniqueness or our hachayatas. Now, there is certainly so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. And it's this finding the courage to reclaim those things, that which has always been in you. As I said, we come into the world with all these good things, and sometimes we just forget that we have them. But when we reclaim our authentic selves, we actually summon the courage to go in and find those things which have always been in us. And we bring those out so that it could be a tremendous, tremendous blessing, not just to ourselves, but also for others around us. Well, how is your heart today? I hope your heart is well, and I hope you are well. I hope that if you are struggling today, that you'll be able to find some rest, and you'll also be able to find some comfort and the peace that you need. Well, we are going through some interesting times out here on the East Coast. It is bitter cold, and I believe we're supposed to get some sort of snow or something over the weekend, and it's supposed to carry through to perhaps Monday, even into next Tuesday. So if you haven't done so already, hurry up, get in your car, go to those grocery stores, get your milk, bread, eggs, toilet paper, whatever else that you need to kind of, as I would say, hunker down and just weather out the storm. Who knows what we're going to get, because we are right here in the Delaware Valley outside of Philadelphia. And so it's often a crapshoot when it comes to precipitation. It could be a lot worse than what we're being told, or it could be nothing as we prepare for the, you know, the worst. And it just turns out to be not that bad. But anyway, that's what's coming our way. So hopefully wherever you are living, you are weathering the storms in life, as well as enjoying any good weather that you are having out there. And next week, don't forget, Monday is February 1st, and next Tuesday is Groundhog's Day. So we will figure out whether or not we're going to go right into spring, or we have six more weeks of winter. But again, we will have to see what Mr. Groundhog says. Good old Punxsutawney Phil out there in the central western part of the state of Pennsylvania. Okay. Well, let me toss out a question for you here today. How many of you out there in internet radio land have ever tied a braid? Yeah, B-R-A-I-D. Have you ever tied a braid? Okay. You know, think about it. Maybe you braided ribbons for a little flair on packages or decorations, or maybe you even tied your hair in a braid, or some other loose strands out there. But either way, we know that braiding makes something stronger because of this intertwining of the fibers or the strands. In fact, some of the best braids I have ever seen are, you know, cases of rope, where you just don't have one strand, you know, around, you know, intertwined with another strand, but you actually have three strands that are woven together, and that makes a very, very tight rope. Well, I was at the hardware store over the past week, and I was buying some clothesline rope. And of course, I had to go down the aisle. First, I had to find the aisle where they have rope. And I have to say, there was quite a selection. There was all kinds of thickness and lengths, you know, just like Can I just get some clothesline rope, please? And I took a moment. I just, you know, I stopped and I looked at some of the heavier and the thicker ropes that are out there. And, you know, I discovered that the strength of the rope was actually in the weaving or the braiding of other strands around it. And some were very strong indeed. Very, very strong indeed. And as I was standing there looking at the rope and just marveling at, you know, trying to find where one strand was going, and I picked up the other strand, and then I kind of lost the other one, the third strand. I was thinking about the fact that we can probably apply this same metaphor to our lives, especially when it comes to forgiveness or gratitude. You know, most of the time, society wants to treat these themes as separate and individual. You know, such as like they're just separate strands. We can't weave them together. And that's just totally incorrect. Because when it comes to integrating our spirituality and our mental health, forgiveness and gratitude can never be separated. Oh, we can try to make this out to be, you know, like a which came first or a chicken egg dilemma. But in all actuality, I've never met a person who didn't express gratitude in all that they say and all that they do without also having forgiveness in their heart. Forgiveness and gratitude goes hand in hand, just like peanut butter and jelly or peas and carrots, if you want to quote, you know, Forrest Gump. Because when we both have forgiveness and gratitude, it opens up the heart like nothing else in our lives, and allows this authentic love of self and others to emerge. It is very powerful. It is very, very strong because it is life-giving and life-changing. So how do we go about cultivating this forgiveness or gratitude and love, you know? Well, it's not as difficult as we think. You know, a lot of people may become intimidated by it, you know, combining forgiveness, gratitude, and then love. Well, I'll just put this out there to you today. It's also something that's very easy to do because you have to begin with often the most difficult people you may ever encounter in your life, your family. Your family, right. I mean, forgiveness and gratitude must begin within our families, because this is often where we've experienced some of the most painful and hurt in our lives. Now, it could be psychological, or it could be emotional, it could be physical, it even could be spiritual pain. And we have to begin with our family and especially with ourselves, or, you know, our family of origin issues, because these are the first people who gave us a sense of how the world works. I mean, we came into the world just totally dependent on somebody else to feed us and burp us and change our diapers and hold us when we were just, you know, scared out of our minds. And this gave us a sense of trust. And if, unfortunately, we were not allowed to have those things for one reason or another, we've developed a sense of mistrust. Or, in other words, who's going to be able to take care of my needs? And we carry this into each and every relationship we then have from those early moments on. But I think just for today, I'd like us to expand our definition of family to include not just, you know, the immediate family or the extended family members, but let's also include family members that have gone on before us, as well as those who come after us. Okay, so we're going to expand this definition of family. Okay, those who have gone on before us, those who will come after us, and especially the people who are in our lives today. Well, one of my favorite family systems theorists, Murray Bowen, he does a lot of generational work with families. And he suggests that a person cannot be fully understood in isolation, that is, apart from the greater context of one's family or one's community or one's culture and the world. I mean, these things have a way of shaping who we are, but not necessarily defining everything there is to us. Okay? So within these larger systems, the family, the community, the culture, and the world, some people really struggle to just differentiate themselves and to be guided by their own thoughts and feelings and actions. You see, oftentimes, whenever we go to, step out on our own or be guided by our own thoughts, larger systems, well, they might have something to say. Maybe the family would say, okay, now don't get too big. You remember who you are. Remember where you came from. And, the community might do that too, or the culture at large. It's like, never forget your roots. And it's not that people want to forget their roots. It's just that they're expanding. They're expanding in their heart because this intertwining of, forgiveness and gratitude and love. You see, in other words, although individuals have this desire to think and live for themselves, developing creative and or critical thinking skills, they often find themselves being drawn back into what I would call the prevailing and often codependent emotional patterns that characterize families and cultures and societies and so forth. Okay, but still, if we're honest with ourselves today, we may live in a part of the world where society's definition of differentiation often sends us a very mixed message. You see, on one hand, differentiation is often taken to the extreme as, we might be told, look out for number one, be an individual, walk to the beat of your own drum, even at the expense of others, if necessary. And yet, on the other hand, there are times when we are also expected to, more or less go with the flow, don't make waves, and fall in line with the status quo. And if these mixed messages are confusing, we're not alone. All we have to do is just examine the history of the systems at large in order to understand at times the violent and oppressive patterns against people who do not conform to such wishes. Okay. But when thinking of offering forgiveness and gratitude, even love and healing to ourselves and our families, we have to really expand this definition of families to include ancestral healing. And we might be hesitant to begin this process because, quite frankly, we may still hold a tremendous amount of bitterness, rage, and contempt against those who committed physical, emotional, and or sexual abuse against us or our families. And as we flip through our family albums, we're all nostalgic. Come on, we've done that too. We may discover that they're not always filled with pleasant memories. And it doesn't take much to look, just look at a picture and we are reminded of what happened way, way, way back when. But instead, these pages could often be filled with memories of abuse or control or oppression or cruelty or whatever else. Like I said, it doesn't take much to kind of trigger us to thinking along the lines of what that picture brings up to us. But nevertheless, when we realize that we can be this transitional generation that no longer has to carry such wounds, then our ancestors no longer have to carry them either. Okay, did you get that? Whenever we realize that we can be the transitional generation and we say, you know what, this ends with me. I'm not going to carry these wounds. And then, no longer do our ancestors have to carry them either. Because a little later on coming up here, I'm going to walk you through a little guided meditation of just how do we heal our ancestors? How do we heal ourselves? And how do we live each day, every step, every second, every year in an attitude of forgiveness, gratitude, and love. Wounded people wound people, and certainly intergenerational trauma attests to this. And we have more examples than we know what to do with. You know? But people who live their lives in forgiveness and gratitude and love transform generations. And discovering the power of our soul's voice is a tremendous catalyst for change. Well, as I previously mentioned, healing intergenerational trauma carries with it a great deal of courage and responsibility, because we could just as easily just dismiss its importance and just passively accept the world in which we live. I mean, we could sit around the dinner table or sit around wherever and just say, you know what, it's not my problem. I didn't live back then. I didn't cause that. But how many times are we reaping what has been sown generations and generations and generations ago? And we have no idea where this may be coming from. And so we get frustrated, or we just to continue those old patterns, and we're just trying to figure out, like, how do I get out from under this? And we don't realize that in taking an honest look at the intergenerations and what exactly has been handed down to us and what we are handing down to those yet to be born, you know, this is something that we have to consider, okay? Well, as previously mentioned, you know, healing this intergenerational trauma carries with it a great deal of courage, as I said, because we could just dismiss it. But yet the dysfunction of, let's say, the social or political or religious or educational, even financial systems of various degrees have not only been handed down to us, but also serve to, let's say, perhaps reinforce distorted perceptions of each other, okay? Because just like forgiveness and gratitude and love, these distortions in our systems are also intertwined, because it appears as though nothing happens in a vacuum. We just go back and we just look at history. Let's go back into the last century or so, you know, and then we can see that just so much have been intertwined and convoluted that all have had a hand in creating and sustaining oppression or coercion or corruption that has just been handed down from one generation after another. But whenever we embrace our soul consciousness and transcend towards this full realization of who we are unable to perpetuate this dysfunction any longer. We're just not able to do that because the transformation is so great. We're just unable to perpetuate the dysfunction that holds a distorted way of life together. We just say, no, I'm not going to carry on the further wounding of not only this generation, but generations yet to be born. And indeed, intrapersonal and interpersonal transformation is that powerful. Yet it's worth noting that just like in, let's say, family systems, society's systems typically do not tolerate people who are not willing to maintain the status quo, okay? Because something that I found is that once a system becomes powerful, whether it be political, educational, religious, or whatever, okay? Once a system becomes powerful, there is a very, very strong tendency. Not automatically, but there's a very strong tendency for its members to be tempted to devalue or dismiss or destroy others in order to hang on to their own power. In other words, this dysfunctional system or systems and the people involved simply cannot risk being authentic because, well, for some people that makes them vulnerable to the truth, which truth, you know, always calls for a change in attitudes and behaviors. Well, these days, you know, obtaining ancestral information is made easier with the assistance of, let's say, these online searches. You know, you've probably looked at them and like I say, Ancestry.com or 23andMe or whatever it is. And in my own working with intergenerational trauma and ancestral healing, I often encourage people to work with 3 or 4 generations to start. I mean, ideally, going back 7 generations creates a more thorough context for the healing to occur. And I'm not just pulling like the 7th generation out of a hat here. I'm basing this on the 7th generational principle that originated from a Native American Iroquois nation. And this principle taught that every decision, albeit individual or societal, has to consider the impact up to the 7th generation. In one section it reads, "The thickness of your skin shall be 7 spans, which is to say that you shall be proof against anger, offensive actions, and criticism. Your heart shall be filled with peace and goodwill, and your mind filled with all wonderful, wonderful things. So look and listen for the welfare of the whole people, and have always in view not only the present, but also the coming generations, even those whose faces are yet beneath the surface of the ground, the unborn of the future generation." See, although this principle emphasizes the effect that present decisions have on, let's say, 7 generations into the future, I also believe it provides us quite a social context to be able to heal 7 generations who have come before us, whose decisions affect us even today. And this is what I mean by it. You know, for example, every new generation begins approximately somewhere around 25, 30 years. And this means that the 7th generation of our ancestors would have begun approximately 175 to 210, give or take a year, years ago. Okay? So let's use the analogy. Let's say if a person was born in 1980, then his or her ancestral context map would look like this, that the first generation going back for someone born in 1980, it would be, you know, somewhere around 1955, 1950 with parents, or maybe even earlier. The second generation would be somewhere around 1930 or 1920. That's the grandparents, and then the third generation, 1905, 1890, the great-great-grandparents, and then the fourth generation, 1880 to 1860, and we just keep going backwards. And so if we look at the 7th generation, that can take us all the way back to 1805 to 1770. And if you know your American history, you know a lot was going on in 1770. Things were just getting ready to get cranked up in America. Okay, so the reason why this social historical time frame is essential to understanding, you know, healing intergenerational trauma is because although personal information on our ancestors may be scarce, we can learn something from them by understanding the times in which they lived. And understanding, I just wonder how they were affected by these things. I mean, we can ask questions such as, what was the majority of norms or social attitudes or even prejudices at that time? What natural disasters or catastrophes would they have faced? How much did they bring home, you know, for a week's wages? And what was the cost of certain food or housing or, you know, whatever they needed, you know, for expenses? And what was the nation's state or, you know, the attitude towards education at that time? What wars may have been fought? And how might our ancestors been involved? Did they fight or did they play another role? And what role did religion or spirituality play in our ancestors' lives? And were there any significant historical traumatic events? Another question could be, you know, what social roles would men and women have been forced into? You know, or how was government viewed at the time? I mean, who was the president way, way, way back when? And were there any major laws enacted? And what were the attitudes back then toward child rearing? What were some of the illnesses and diseases that people feared contracting? And when they did, were there any cures? And how was death talked about or treated in the home or society? And so on and so on and so on. We could just, you know, spend endless hours just coming up with just multiple questions. Yeah. And I'm interested if you have any questions on this theme here today. So if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. Again, it's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck, and I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are presently listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, I just want to share with you briefly about what next week's show, February the 5th. There we are in the month of February. February the 5th, 2021. And the title of that talk is going to be The Perspiration of Inspiration. That's right, The Perspiration of Inspiration. And depending on who you talk to, everybody has a different definition of what inspiration means to them. But I think we often complicate it by just trying to figure it out, you know, because some people might say that inspiration is when you really connect to your passion. Or others will, you know, might define inspiration as, well, when you have a clear vision of what you want to do and the energy is behind it. Okay. Well, either way, we can come up with many more definitions, but either way, you know, whenever we find our inspiration, there's always work to be done. And quite often this will lead us to work up a sweat. So it's just interesting. You know, we know when we are inspired, but how do we share that with others? Like, how do we explain why we do what we do? And instead of just saying, well, I was just inspired one day. And as I was thinking about this title, I remembered the immortal words of Willy Wonka in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. When he was asked about his inventions, he turns to the small crowd and he goes, "Invention, my dear friends, is 93% perspiration, 6% electricity, 4% evaporation, and 2% butterscotch ripple." Okay, you got that formula? Okay. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to find some butterscotch ripple and see if the wisdom of Willy Wonka holds up. But anyway, so I invite you to tune in next Friday, The Perspiration of Inspiration. Okay. Well, before the break, we were talking about healing intergenerational trauma or healing our ancestors and even healing our own spiritual path. Because a lot of times we go through things and it just simply either weighs us down or we push down the very gifts and graces that we have come into this world with, or we minimize those. We have no idea why we do what we do sometimes. Okay, but in looking at how forgiveness and gratitude and love are just so intertwined, this makes all the difference, because this is where we truly find our healing. And so I'm just inviting you to expand your definition today of family, because that's where we're going to begin, our families. You know, what are some of the hurts that we need to forgive or be forgiven from? Because whenever we live, you know, being forgiven or we forgive others, we tend to automatically live in a, you know, at this attitude of gratitude. We can't help it because we realized how much we've been forgiven. We see the benefits of reconciling relationships, repairing relationships, and that fills us with tremendous, tremendous gratitude. And so whenever we have forgiveness or we are forgiven and we are living in gratitude, it's just going to show up tremendously with a heart that's filled with love. And it's just going to spread to others. And even though they may not know what to call it, they're going to benefit from it, because we're going to be treating not only ourselves differently, but also treating others much, much differently. So let's go on here a little bit with healing, you know, those who have come before us. So before beginning any ancestral healing, I just ask that you would just please consider your motivation. You know, you could it may not understand the full impact of, you know, healing the ancestors will have on you, but creating this dialogue with our ancestors is really not a game. It's not meant to be taken lightly. And, you know, many people find a richness that comes into their lives knowing that their ancestors exist beyond the limits of time and space. And indeed, our ancestors are very much a part of our lives because, you know, whether or not we realize it, every time we may visit a loved one's grave site or remember them in other ways, we're also carrying on an internal dialogue with them and the conversations or the experiences we had with them. You know, every anniversary or every birthday or other special occasions remind us that relationships continue to exist beyond the grave. And in these cases, we're reminded that some family issues have been resolved and yet some have not been. But still, their voices of pain and suffering and maybe even trauma have brought us to this moment in which we are now ready to embrace the implication of our family's healing. So let's begin. Okay. Find a quiet place where you're not going to be disturbed. Okay. Turn off your phone, shut down the computer. Okay. You can't have those on when you're doing this. All right. So find a quiet place where you're not going to be disturbed. And if you have them, you know, photographs or images of your loved ones, ancestors are a great way to recreate visual clues and should be included in this healing process. And so if this is your first time doing an ancestral healing, I certainly recommend that you set your intention to work with, let's say, only your parents or grandparents, maybe even great-grandparents, okay? But just begin slow, okay? All right. Well, once you are in a place where you're not going to be disturbed and you've turned off your cell phone, I want you to then to begin by centering your soul through prayer and meditation. Okay, quiet your thoughts, slow down your breathing, set your intention to consciously connect with your ancestors, and offer healing for those who need to be released from, let's say, those who are stuck in their trauma. And at this point, it's also wise to set your intention to also be released from any psychological or emotional and or spiritual wounds that you may carry unconsciously. Okay? And be honest with yourself about any known offenses that, you know, you are not ready to forgive. Okay, there's no shame and guilt in that, but there's, you know, forgiveness of others is often a process. So be honest with yourself about the things that you know that you are not ready to forgive. Okay, but yet at the same time, ask God for the grace needed to recognize that if there are any underlying misperceptions about your ancestors or their effect on you, okay, ask God for that grace and that strength and that peace in this moment. And so as you're centering yourself, also consider, you know, what were the lessons that you were taught growing up? You know, what rules or values were you taught as a child? And who taught you these lessons? Okay. Which lessons do you agree with? Which ones have you discarded? How have, let's say, any family secrets benefited and or burdened the family? Which memories of your loved ones no longer serve you? Which memories still do? What physical or emotional, psychological or spiritual wounds do you need to forgive or let go of or be released from? Which of these wounds do you believe you need to hold on to? And why? And what is the internal message these wounds say to you about you? And, you know, were there any promises that you made to your loved ones that you might need to be forgiven for not keeping? Okay. What have you been thankful for in your family? And how was that expressed? Or even today, how is that expressed? And when was the last time your family or ancestors told you they loved you? When was the last time we told them we loved them? And what other family stories do you remember? Okay. So when you are ready, as I said, close your eyes and imagine yourself in a large open area. Okay, imagine in front of you, there are just thousands and thousands of people, and some of their faces you can recognize and some you cannot. Okay, but imagine these are your ancestors, your relatives, your kin. And begin the conversation by saying something like, "This is your grandson," or "This is your granddaughter, and I'm here to help heal our family. I've heard your cries and I recognize your voices and the things that I have struggled with and or suffered with. Your physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual pain is my pain, and my pain is your pain. Yet your physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual joy is also my joy, and my joy is also your joy. And when I've looked at my life, I have become, and this is where we just need to fill in the blank with our own descriptor, I have become whatever at times with what I have struggled with and what has been passed down to me. In this moment, I ask your forgiveness and release for not fully understanding perhaps your own struggles, your pain and your suffering. But I don't want to carry this burden any longer. Well, at that time, ask if there are any ancestors who need to be forgiven for what they have done during their lifetime so that they can be healed and released from the trauma that has weighed them down. And one or two may step forward. Or groups may come forward, depending on whether the forgiveness is a shared burden. And if you are focusing on one or two relatives, address them by name. Talk to them. by their name. Call them by their name. Look at them with compassion and realize the historical context in which they lived. We could say things such as, I forgive you for what you have done, and I no longer carry this burden. Therefore, be released from your burdens and be set free, no longer bound by your traumatic experiences, as well as no longer being held down, you know, as with any kind of guilt or shame that has trapped you for so long. And I also thank you for the blessings that you have given me and the positive characteristics in my life, for which I am truly grateful for. And if we just happen to remember those positive characteristics, you know, the gifts and graces, remember, they've also been handed down to us too. Okay, so name them. And then finally say, and I thank you for your perseverance because I am here today. We are so connected. Well, there may also be ancestors that come forward at that time and offer their own gratitude for being forgiven and released from their trauma or their burdens. And you can repeat this conversation as long as it is necessary. And afterwards, you may sense this peace that just fills you when you realize, you know, what has taken place. Or a sense of peace may fill you when you realize it's time to close. And as I said, you can repeat the conversation as long as it is necessary. But when you feel as though you are done, just say, I love you. And I am grateful for being part of this family. Be released and go with God. Now, to close this time with your ancestors, I usually offer a prayer or a mantra or another positive meditation just to reinforce the healing that has taken place. I mean, some people say the Lord's Prayer or the Mula Mantra or sing a Native American Indian ancestral song, an Irish blessing, or another favorite prayer or hymn. In my family, it is traditional to read the poem Gone From My Sight by Henry Van Dyke. And Henry here lived in the he was born in mid-1800s and he died in 1933. But this poem, you know, Gone From My Sight is just, you know, like I said, it's a family tradition that is read at every graveside ceremony. And I often use this poem as a meditation when I finish an ancestral healing. And Henry Van Dyke writes, I'm standing upon a seashore. A ship at my side spreads her white sails to the moving breeze and starts for the blue ocean. She is an object of beauty and strength. I stand and I watch her until at length she hangs like a speck of white cloud just where the sea and sky come to mingle with each other. Then somebody at my side says, there, she's gone. Gone where? Gone from my sight. That is all. She is just as large in mast and hull and spar as she was when she left my side. And she is just as able to bear her load of living freight to her destined port. Her diminished size is in me, but not in her. And just at the moment when someone says, there, she is gone, there are other eyes watching her coming, and other voices ready to take up the glad shout, here she comes. Well, I invite you to develop your own way of continuing dialogue with your ancestors and living in just a wonderful, wonderful sense of forgiveness and gratitude and love. And for the next few days, just be particularly careful to just just pay attention to what's going on around you. Be particularly mindful to, you know, write down or journal down any insights or impressions or dreams that happen to come up. For me, it's often the dreams that I know something is happening, something is shifting. And dreams, as I mentioned, several weeks ago in one of these broadcasts, that dreams is just the way that our subconscious is just working out what we have experienced. Okay, so may also make note of any changes in your perspectives regarding your present relationships. Now you can ask yourself, you know, how do you now view yourself, or how do I now view others? In what ways do you now treat yourself and others differently? And how do others appear to treat you? In what ways are you more understanding or loving or compassionate and forgiving and patient with yourself and others? And more importantly, have you noticed how you now tell your family stories from a different perspective? That's always just a joy to hear somebody from a healthier place, a place of healing, to share their family stories. Well, in creating a living dialogue with our ancestors, let's also keep in mind that our soul connection with them is not about placing blame or finding fault for wounds suffered from intergenerational trauma. Instead, it's a dialogue intended to create this ongoing opportunity for healing and reconciliation, as well as stopping the harmful psychological, emotional, spiritual patterns from being passed down onto generations yet to be born. And one of my favorite things in teaching, say, teenagers about intergenerational trauma, healing intergenerational trauma, is that, we usually start off conversations and just, you know, what's been going on in your life, what's going on. And I'd say 9 times out of 10, their stories come around to, everybody thinks I'm the problem. Everybody thinks it's my fault. Everybody thinks that if I would just be smarter or get better grades in school or whatever it is, then, you know, the family would be better. And there is a lot of heartbreak in their voices. Their voices sometimes crack when they're telling me this. And I can feel, let alone see, the tremendous just emotional, psychological, spiritual weight that is just burdening them down. And so I share with them, I said, you know what? Let's consider the fact that you're not the problem, okay? And of course, they have no idea what I'm getting at. But I say, what if, for the sake of argument, what if we consider the fact that perhaps you're the strongest one in the family? Well, how so? Everybody's telling me it's my fault. And I go, it's not your fault. You know, you don't, no. You're the strongest one in the family because you're here with me. We're talking about this. You know, the other family members, maybe they're not as strong as you, or maybe people who died before you, you know, grandparents, great-great-great-great-great-grandparents, they weren't strong enough to stop, let's say, these cycles of abuse or these perspectives or negative comments or whatever it is. And it just kept getting handed down and handing down and handing down until it landed on somebody who realized that they are the strongest one in the family. And that's you. And I tell you what, when kids get this, the teenagers get this, they get this huge smile on their face. And just you can feel the joy that just comes over them. It is just that powerful, because they realize that they're not the problem, that they are the solution. And they just kind of, you know, in their own way, they just say, cool, this is great. You know, it's like, okay, don't get a big head about this, because we still got a lot of work to do. But, you know, let's just consider that you are the one to heal people who are in your life now, as well as yourself, as well as, you know, healing people who have gone on before you, or even those who will come after you, let's say your children or grandchildren someday. And I tell you what, just the way this understanding empowers them, it just, I mean, you talk about passion, you talk about they're so hungry to, well, what do I got to do to reach this point of intertwining, you know, the forgiveness, the gratitude, and the love. And I say, okay, we got to start with the family. Okay, and we take it slow, but they are so eager to bring healing to those because they know themselves what it means to suffer and be burdened and weighed down by, let's say, traumatic things that the family was just unable to take care of. Okay, because being the transitional generation, it requires us, all of us, to stand in the gap, as it were, and offer release, not just for ourselves, but also for all family members, regardless of whether or not they, let's say, were perpetrators or victims, and so on and so forth. Okay? So this kind of work takes time, but it is so, so rewarding. So rewarding. Okay? So whenever we have these three seeds that have been planted in our hearts, the forgiveness, gratitude, and love, we take nothing for granted in this life. You know, not one breath, not one sip of water, nor the opportunity to bring healing from trauma in another person's life, because everything and everyone is connected. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Until next week, please be safe out there, take care of yourselves, and continue talking with your ancestors. They have a lot to say because we have this blood-soul connection with them, and we can find just powerful, powerful, life-giving ways in which we can heal not just ourselves but them, as well as others yet to be born. Take care, and God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific time on PBS Radio TV.